Welcome to Polycast, an official podcast of Bulletin Civilization Site.
Daniel Quick.
Makalua.
Imran Siddiqui.
Hey, Madeline. With guest co-host
Michael Lucas Smith.
Mom, he's listening to Polycast again. What? I told you 1,000 times.
This is a family show.
Who's family?
Michael, since this is the second time you've been on the show and the second time in a row, you're a veteran now, so you get to do the introductions. Congratulations.
Yeah.
What? I can't do that. I don't even know what episode it is. Welcome to Polycast, an official podcast of a Apolloton Civilization site. I'm Michael Lucas Smith, and you're listening to episode 38 with Daniel Quick. Thank you on the forums.
Hello there.
K-Mad.
Hi.
Makalua.
Brought to you this morning by the fine people at Starbucks.
And Imran Siddiqui.
Hello.
Since you're obsessed with healthy cities, What is the life expectancy statistics of generally that you end up with in your games? I'm always like last.
I don't know. I never look at that. You actually want to be low on an unhappiness because it means that you're being efficient. And I'm pretty low on happiness because I abuse my people. And early on, I'm not obsessed with health because there's not a whole lot you can do. But later on, I'm like, oh, nice big pretty cities.
Yeah, but I want to be number one in all the columns.
I just, you know, I'm not very logical when I play sometimes. I just, you know, want things to be pretty. I'm just a weirdo. But it works for me, and I have fun.
For me, the life expectancy, I'm usually lagging in the early to middle game, but then by the end, I'm at or near the top. It usually takes me a little longer to build the health improvements in my cities before anything else, even as new ones come along and get new technologies, which is probably why I lag early on.
Well, yeah, I'll build a library first if it has commerce. I actually don't know what my life expectancy is because I don't pay attention to that. I just don't like the toxic fumes coming out. It's ugly, and you can see it from outside.
And you see, Michael, that's why Kelly is a regular co-host, and you're only a guest because she gives better answers.
Well, I'm regularly scheduled. I don't know that I'm regular. I'm a little
bit. But as a guest, I can get away with more stuff.
And pointing out the obvious, that's another point deducted. Yeah.
Damn.
I believe K-Mad would like to give us a few words on sweater vests.
No, that's okay.
Do you ever get the distinct feeling you're missing something?
I could crochet one if we want to have a contest. I could crochet one for somebody.
As Merck says, vests protect you from things. Bulletproof vests protect you from bullets. Life vests protect you from drowning, and sweater vests protect you from pretty curls.
That was a good line.
In the news today, we discussed Civ Rev Preview on Xbox 360 by Xbox360IGN.com.
In forum talk this week, we talked about the unofficial Civ 4 Beyond the Sword 3.13 patch, and I want to be a vassal too.
Wouldn't you like to be a vassal too?
I did that in an earlier episode.
In the Senate this week, we talked about tech whoring, and oh yes, I said tech whoring. Whether you should be building harbors. And whether you should build harbors everywhere, and also about interesting type of comparison game using a thief economy.
On the research lab, we looked at natural wonders.
And prompted by a listener's suggestion, the theater is reborn with a new purpose. Michael and I share recent Civilization IV gameplay experiences.
Here's what's been making news in the Civ community.
I'm going to attempt to introduce news. Civilization Revolutions preview on Xbox 360.
Wow. I didn't say you could introduce the news topics, but...
Well, Dan loves to talk about Civ Revolution, so...
Ew, he's talking about Dan's precious.
A 4-page preview of Civilization Revolution, hands-on by Steve Butts, who has written quite a bit about Civ on IGN.
Does anyone else see the kind of comparison between Civ Rev on Xbox 360 and Spore? They've both got this kind of warped, angular perspective of the world. I like it. But it's almost like Will Wright versus Sid Meier.
I hadn't thought about that.
No, me neither.
Who can get the perspective at first?
I can kind of see it now that you mention it.
I think it looks cool, but yeah, it's definitely similar.
Yeah.
It is actual 3D, but between the normal moving the camera around all the time, 3D and the old school kind of isometric views.
They said they weren't going to bring out Civ Rev for PC, didn't they?
I think they pretty much said no.
It's a shame, because I want to play it, and I don't want to buy an Xbox 360 to play it.
Then you can buy a DS.
Actually, as a programmer, I can really appreciate where they talk about how they've got the same game engine running on all the platforms, and then the user interface is the bit they write for each platform. I can really appreciate that. I think that's really cool.
It saved them a lot of work.
But it still doesn't give me my PC version.
Instead of having to program it X different times, just to program it once and then do a little rewrite the interface. Not that that's simple, but it's a lot less complex than rewriting the whole thing.
And it's better also for consistency from one platform to another.
Yeah, so you don't have completely and totally different interfaces on even tiles and look on everything. It's like, is this the same two games? Or is this one game? Wait, what?
We learned some information about some of the civilization's unique abilities, such as Germany's ability to instantly upgrade units as new technology becomes available, which reminds me of Rise of Nations instantly.
We learned that Catherine the Great is a hottie.
The Aztecs' ability to automatically heal even when in enemy territory, or the Chinese power is that the people are never less than unhappy, which is... wow, and I know some people will be like, well, this is too powerful, this is extreme. Well, that's kind of the point, helping towards games going faster, except that, as this author notes, he found it difficult to try to choose which civilization he wanted to play because all of the bonuses sounded really good.
I do like the Zulu one, where you get like 3-to-1 advantage with your military tech. That's crazy.
Otherwise, the combat design is that a unit will automatically win the fight if the odds are at least 7-to-1 in their favor. But yeah, the Zulus is 3-to-1. That, wow.
Yeah, that might make us builders think harder about going to war, huh?
Yeah, well, keeping up with the tech so that you can defend.
Either that, or when you find out that the Zulu are in the game, you just go, nah, I quit.
Start.
Well, you could, you know, smooth them over with diplomacy so you don't have to go to war with them.
Yeah, I wonder if they'll actually use that.
Each galley comes with a galley crew that can be put ashore to explore the interior while the galley maps out the coastline, so it sounds like you don't have to load a unit onto your galley to, in turn, go ashore. That's interesting. That's not necessarily something I would like to see in a Civ 5, for example, but towards being able to have it so that the game moves along more quickly and there are less odd and end decisions, especially for newer players, that's not a bad idea.
What happens if they die?
the galley can't get home.
Yeah, this is the ship stranded.
Just stuck there for 1,000 years.
Well, how does the ship steer to go explore if their crew is...
Maybe it's just part of the crew.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. Oh, veteran Civ players should note that hills also have an offensive value.
Well, they ought to.
That's cool.
Come on, archer volley launch from the top of the hill? It's going to hurt.
I saw Star Wars 3, and having the high ground means you always win.
Of course, you're also a better target up there, but...
George Lucas, if you would like to sponsor the show.
No. Don't get him near the show.
You would like to sue the show.
Now that he'd do.
So I guess a tank is more than 7-to-1 odds versus a spearman. So it would automatically win.
Unless it's a Zulu spearman.
The start of the Civ 4 VTS Team Democracy game is growing ever closer. General game setting and rule discussions are ongoing as of this recording. A half dozen teams with over 50 members are set to enter the fray already. For more on the Tri-League and Team DG, log on to apolton.net/forums.
Got news? Email news@apolton.net or send a private message to Dan Q, Locutus, or one of the other news editors. This is Forum Talk, where we investigate hot Civ issues in the forums.
First topic is unofficial Civ 4 Beyond the Sword 3.13 patch. The Hork, basically, it's a unofficial patch. It modifies the core DLL files, kind of like Solver's patch for 3.02, fixed some of the issues on BTS before, I guess, Firaxis actually gets an official patch.
Yeah, I think they've been busy doing CivRev, but it's kind of amazing that no one noticed that you can't see culture and espionage.
Mm-hmm. He's done a great job fixing some things. He's also changed some things that I wouldn't have fixed, but, you know, it's judgment call.
Mm.
Like what?
Well, you can't put your privateers in your friend's cities to protect them anymore, and I like abusing that system. I like to cheat that way.
How did I know it was going to be about privateers?
Yarr. But really, he's right. You shouldn't be able to do that because the AI doesn't take advantage of it. But sometimes I like to do that.
Well, the one I really, really like is Vassal spies will no longer be caught in your territory. The number of wars I've started because of that. It's like, oh, damn spies. That's it. I'm going to war with that guy. That's really annoying.
What did people think about the change where you can now found corporations under mercantilism with this patch?
I don't know.
Well, we talked about that in the thread. He kind of pulls people, you know, and of course he gets people on both sides and then he has to make the call. I didn't like it because, of course, spiritual is my favorite trait, as I've said a million times. And to me, that's one of the benefits of spiritual is you get to change your traits for no penalty. And so you can say, okay, I want to go out into another civic so that I can do that, and then I'll go back into mercantilism. But, you know, he decided to make that change, so that's fine. I thought it was fine the way that it was because spiritual can change and everybody else has to evaluate whether it's worth the anarchy.
I think maybe the idea of a corporation doesn't really fit in the era of mercantilism.
Mm-hmm.
That's my feel on it.
Yeah, that's the one change I don't like. If you don't want corporations, then you make the choice for mercantilism. They can be beneficial at times, and I think that certain corporations are more worth the while than others, but that's going to depend on your strategy, you know, where you are in the game relative to everyone else, and what kind of great people you're pumping out, and how far along you are along the tech tree. Can you even found a certain corporation?
And it's not game-breaking because you can change out to found it and then change back in and you don't lose it, you know, whether you're spiritual or not, but it's okay.
Burek does say that in addition to the DLL file that you can change, he's included the source code so that you can make your own revisions. Otherwise, you can just delete or ignore them. So that's nice that that's included in this patch, is that if there's one or two things that you don't like or you want to tweak it even further, you can.
You know what else he did? He brought back the glance screen. He is my hero. Because, you know, I obsess over how they like each other, because if they hate each other, then I can't function if it doesn't go along with my plans. I was really irritated when they took it out because it was ugly.
It was functional.
I guess I don't understand, because if you go to the relationships page, you can just click on each leader and see how they care about everyone else.
Right, but you have to do a bunch of clicking.
Yeah.
I had withdrawals.
I like the exploit of being able to put masses and masses of planes into your vassal cities and stuff.
Yeah, you took that away too.
That's a shame that's gone.
Vassals can no longer be their master's worst enemy.
That's not that realistic, really. If you've capitulated, just because you're compliant now doesn't mean you like them.
Exactly. Overall, everyone else knows you're plotting against them to overthrow them while you're pretending to be all nice.
They often are, right? Like, if you capture another civ, they capitulate, and then they go and colonize overseas to get their land and tech up, then they're free.
Exactly.
That's a change I could take or leave, but now new colonies mirror their master's tech status with no tech brokering enabled, and new colonies mirror their master's exploration status. The map status thing I could see.
Yeah, it's the tech status that's kind of bothering. Because usually the colony was usually a bit more backwards in technology than the homeland was.
Spies no longer interrupt their mission when moving next to an enemy unit.
Yeah. Oh, that's good.
It's an enemy unit. Freeze!
Can you see us?
Dissolve into the shadows. Dissolve into the shadows.
Well, the AI is less likely to build executives if they can't afford to use them or already have sufficient, was insane. They would have like 13 executives in a city, but they couldn't afford to spread the company into another city. But they wouldn't take that into account. They would only look at how many of their cities didn't have the corporation. So they would keep making executives. And then when they're doing their money check at the beginning of the next term, they couldn't spread it, but they knew they didn't have X cities with a corporation, so they start making another executive. And that was crazy. You know, it was handicapping them because they should be building something more important in their cities.
I remember I moved a unit in and he had 140 executives in this one city.
Yeah, you'd see this huge stack of units in their capital and you'd be going, oh my god.
I'm defending my city with 15 executives.
He's the executives for a shield instead of, oh, I don't know, some tanks.
Yeah, so that was important to get folks.
Automated workers will no longer idle when railroading is possible.
Or better yet, the one where a worker can capture a city.
Oh yeah, that was great. It was really odd circumstances. I don't even know how you figured out what the heck was going on with that one.
Well, the worker was really persuasive.
Here's a big one. Prevented new colonies from overwriting previously existing civs.
I'd never seen that happen.
That's a huge one because it used to be if you had the max number of civs in a game and then, say, Alex dies, then when anybody makes a new colony, or maybe it's just when you make a new colony, the new colony has somebody else's name, but in the background, the game assigns Alex's status when he died to the new colony. So whoever Alex was at war with, the new colony is at war with.
Like, perhaps their homeland.
Oh, I have seen that.
Uh-huh. So that was a big, fat deal.
Yeah.
The new colony could start out hating you. I think your own new colony could start out hating you. Somebody else's new colony could instantly be at war with you. That could be game-breaking.
I did it once, and my new colony was at war with me.
Uh-huh.
I was very surprised.
That's not pretty.
They suffered.
Well, good for you.
Also, another big change, and I've noticed this a lot, and I'm exploiting it, actually. Fixed bug that caused the AI to trade for resources it already had.
Now, Dan, I would never exploit bugs in the game.
You know, I had 5 or 6 extra pig resources. Let's say, I don't know why I picked that. And I'd trade it to whomever, and then I'd remember, okay, and of course, that now with Beyond the Sword, they're not as generous with how much gold they're willing to give per turn for trading for resources. You had 3 gold per turn, you offer me 2 gold for this. Okay, I'll go back and offer you, say, banana. But it says, trade pigs! And I'm like, but I just, well, okay then, because...
You want pigs, you get pigs.
This topic was actually suggested by Merg, and it also relates to a post by Dr. Spike in the Suggest Topics for Polycast or Modcast thread, where he says, the question of if and when Civ 4 will be finished is quite topical and a crucial question for the community.
I know why you chose bananas for your example.
You thought it was a poll.
No, so the trade wouldn't have been invalid. I want to be a vassal too. Azamon 333 said he wishes that the AI would be able to vassalize him.
All of you guys just want Catherine or Boudica to vassalize you. I just don't get what that's about.
Spank me. Spank me.
You know, they say it's a bit of an exploit because the AI will give you all its techs. I don't think that's true because when somebody becomes my vassal, I don't immediately just give them all my tech.
Michael, you're not an AI.
How do you know?
You're a programmer, but I don't think you're an AI. I mean, you're from Australia. That's not what the A stands for, is it? You're an Australian intelligence, but you're not stuck with programming logic, are you? You can think for yourself, I think.
So why would the AI just give all the text to its vassals? Is that what it does when it vassalizes another computer?
No, I've seen them not do that.
Because they go on about, you know, oh, this is no good, it's a big exploit. I don't think it is.
I definitely see them not give all their techs to their vassal. I've seen them not give all their resources to the vassal, but I have seen them be very generous with their vassals, too.
Which you need, because you sucked. You sucked so bad you became a vassal, so you need help.
As this best J.E. said, sometimes it is sensible to vassalize in certain situations because you could still go for a space or a culture or a diplomatic victory, and if you vassaled yourself to a larger civ, you can be defended that way. And getting fat says, I don't think one should win a diplomatic victory as a vassal. Diplomacy is an extension of power in reality, and as much as we've talked about realism not necessarily making good gameplay, I like in one sense the idea that you can't win a diplomatic victory as a vassal, except now are we going to give certain restrictions to other victories as well? I just wonder if that's a slippery slope.
I think some of these people want to do this because they want a partnership with the AI, but when you work at it well, you can get permanent alliances.
I had Wing Kong try to be my vassal in a game that I was playing to be silly, some challenge that somebody set up on CFC. A one city challenge game where you're supposed to not trade with the AI at all to make them like you and try to get up to space. So you weren't allowed to do any trades with them at all. But because of favored civics, he ended up liking me anyway. And he kept begging to be my vassal, even though I had rigged it to be always peace and no barbarians. And he kept phrasing it as, you know, mighty caveman, please protect us. And that just cracked me up. So I was like, dude, I haven't done anything to try to be your friend, but you love me and want to be my vassal. But I told him no, because I wasn't allowed to do any trades with him.
Aww.
Well, but, you know, they're just set up so that they want to do it. But, I mean, I didn't have much power, but I had so much of a tech lead above him that was enough power, even though I had one city and not very many units. I was on a low level.
Insert She's So High by Tal Bachman here. Welcome to the Senate, where we discuss game strategy.
Tech whore. Hydra loves being a tech whore. What that means, I guess, in the context of the game. Using Darius the First, he's maintaining a tech lead, and periodically calls him up, offers him all the same tech, and accept what they give him. Apparently, in the early game, this basically, he gets a lot of money. He uses that to deficit spend to keep his research rate up. And he's wondering if this is an exploit or only works at the really lower levels.
Lower levels.
Well, that was easy.
Getting that tech lead, it takes a long time. The next guy, Jeebus Green, an Aussie, who points out that when he's playing on Prince, he eventually ends up with a tech lead at some point, but you got to work at it.
The counterintuitive thing is that it's much, much easier to get a lot of cash out of the AIs if you're playing at one of the very highest levels. They have no money to give you at the levels below Noble. At Deity, I can get, seriously, enough cash to flat out buy more than half the UN if I'm playing one of my weird OCC diplomatic victory games. Because of their advantages, they have so much money.
Yeah, I've seen that too.
It depends on what he means by, you know, clean them out of all cash. You know, and there are other difficulties on the higher levels that you don't face on the lower difficulties. So, you know, it balances out.
Which takes money.
Right. Well, for OCC, I don't spend any money either.
Okay.
But from that perspective, if you're looking at it strictly from how much money you can get from them, you can get basically exponentially more money from them if you're playing on a higher level. Now, you also need a lot more money.
And you also get in this interesting position where they will try to bribe you, which is really cool.
Yeah, and they can pay you a lot more per turn because they have a lot more per turn. Good luck getting 12 or 20 GPT from somebody on Noble. It's just, it hardly happens.
It's not worth selling the tech.
And they don't have many techs to trade. But you don't need to trade as much tech because you have more tech late.
Either that or they have techs they could trade, but they don't want to.
Yeah.
Well, that's not because of the difficulty level. That's because you don't know how to kiss up to them. Or threaten them.
Frenzy Fall, starter topic say, harbors everywhere, ? Basically, he remembered someone saying somewhere that it may be detrimental to build a harbor in some cities because they actually alter the city's trade route choices by making the harbored city a stronger choice for high-yield trade routes. If a high-payoff trade route's going to your capital and multiplied by bureaucracy, if you build a harbor in a different city, you can steal the capital's trade route, and the result is less payoff empire-wide, and he wants to know if this is true, and secondly, whether building harbors in every city be beneficial, money-wise.
This thread freaked me out. Totally ruined my game, because suddenly I was like, should I build the harbor or not? You need the health. You really need the health.
I'll build the harbors in every coastal city I have. Eventually, is it an advantage monetarily? Well, you can't just think of that alone. You also have to think of the health. And yeah, you have to think about the hammer cost that it's going to take. So maybe in some coastal cities, it's going to take longer for me to build a harbor than others. But when it comes to figuring out, oh, you know, is it a larger city or other cities nearby taking away trade roads from other cities? I don't really see the point of getting into that.
Mm.
Actually, someone later on in the thread does the math and it evens out anyway. You get an advantage even if you do put harbors everywhere.
Blake actually comes and says, you know, you generally get the same amount of benefit from building harbors in the best cities as you do in building harbors in all cities. So he says, obviously it makes sense to only build harbors in the best cities and save a lot of hammers, but of course there's the health benefit as well.
I can't stand the toxic fumes of our unhealthy cities. I used to build them more when custom houses weren't international only. Because you need one before you need a customs house. Now I like, if I'm going to have Sid Sushi, oftentimes my cities will be bigger at the end than the AI cities because of my obsession with health and not having green and healthy faces. Now I'm serious, because I'll get Sid Sushi and not make the city unhealthy if at all possible. And your trade routes in the city partly depend on population, so a lot of my cities will be trading with myself because that'll be a better trade route than with them.
So again, to me, it's not if you're going to build harbors in all your cities, but when, and it'll vary from city to city.
They play this really cool game, the Thief Economy, where they weren't allowed to research their own technology after they had Alphabet, and they had to steal all of their technology. So they were really focused on getting lots of espionage points, lots of spies, and basically stealing from as many other civs as possible. They discovered some really interesting stuff. Like, after a while, they got ahead in the tech. They were always at the top. So they had to share tech, give it away to other civilizations just to keep the other civilizations from stalling in their tech research. And their victory condition was the space race. So they had to get all the techs to do the space race and then win the space race. And they weren't allowed to research the techs themselves.
But one civ would have one tech and another one would have another one, and then they'd have to give Hattie a tech they got from somebody else to prevent her from researching it herself so that hopefully she would research something else that nobody had so that they would end up getting all of the space race techs.
And they ended up finding out that using espionage to steal technologies is actually cheaper than doing research. It's like 25% cheaper in the long run. I mean, it's more maintenance for the player to actually go and send these spies out everywhere and wait 5 turns in each city to get the 50% espionage bonus. But in the end, it's actually unbalanced. You get way ahead on espionage points when you do this. And they also had the interesting thing where they said, this is possibly the first time I've ever built a courthouse in my capital city just for the espionage points.
Yeah, if I'm remembering right, there's more passive modifiers for espionage. There's like 3 buildings that will give you espionage points just for sitting there in your city.
And they're at 100%, not 50%, like Scotland Yard.
Yeah, but I mean, there's the security bureau and the something else and something else.
Intelligence agency, courthouse.
Right. That you don't need great people for. Whereas for the science, you get a university and a library. So you get to assign specialists later. So you don't get to assign as many early as you do with the library, but you get more passive buildings without assigning people as specialists. You get more passive points without doing anything. So eventually you can rack up the points for free.
Yeah, they actually had another problem too, that because they had so much espionage, the AIs were attempting to keep up and they were dropping their research rate down and pumping up their espionage rate.
Oh, yeah.
But in the end, it looked like the AIs sort of gave up and stop trying to compete.
And I've seen that in my own games. If you do use what they were calling the spy bomb, if you get an early spy from the Great Wall and you use it on somebody, I mean, I've had one neighbor sometimes, so you'll just go and infiltrate him and steal the early techs. they know how many points you have versus them, just like you do. And if you have a lot more points than them, they try to assign their slider because they can't stand being behind. And, of course, their tech rate suffers, and then you have less techs to steal from them with all of your lovely espionage points. And it's really not the smartest thing for them to do if you have 3,000 points versus their 75 points, because they're not going to catch up.
Yeah, but if you actually used spies like they're designed and you started poisoning and spreading dissent and all that kind of stuff, you'd obliterate them because you just got so many points to waste.
Yeah.
And I see one of the other rules of this was that you could not detonate a great spy bomb.
Right.
No. But in the end, they obliterated it.
And if I remember right, this is the game where they had another team doing it and they were allowed to use the spy bomb.
I think they ended that one because it was just way too unbalanced.
Yeah.
But, yeah, in the end, they won. It was a very convincing victory, too.
Uh-huh. It was pretty educational.
It's an interesting tactic that I never even considered before. I know we talked about in the past about what do you do with that spy slider, and I know there was even a debate about whether or not to even turn it up, just leave it at zero or move it up to 10% or just rely on more passive than anything and only even consider maybe in the later game doing anything with the slider, but actually having it so that when it comes to technology, you've got to steal everything after Alphabet.
Well, that was the funny thing. It's like they call it the thief economy, but after a while, they were the ones giving everything away. So
thief and Santa Claus combined.
No, I've got it. It's the Robin Hood economy.
I was thinking that.
And I've had situations sort of like that, you know, when I really want a certain technology and nobody's working on it for me to trade with them. One example is, I want machinery, so I'll have, okay, everybody I like, I'll give you metal casting if that's the order that they come in, or vice versa. Because I'm trying to get to astronomy, and this one prereq, I just really don't want to waste my time if I'm not going to go to war with anybody. Because you don't want them to spend their time researching it if you're not in danger of going to war with them.
And I see this as a bit of an older threat, but still a goodie. Very well illustrated with screenshots.
Yeah, it's actually a pretty good read. It's almost like reading a novel. I got addicted to it over several nights.
There's a good way for competitive play and to have other people give you advice. That's the Apollotson University.
And we would find that where? Jeez.
Apollotson.net/forums.
Really? Wow. How could I figure that out from Apollotson University?
I don't know.
Sometimes I wonder.
Come on into the research lab, where we explore concepts that are not in Civ yet, but may be in the future. Barack wanted to say, wouldn't it be nice if they could find, not build, natural wonders on the map like Grand Canyon, Torrey Falls, blah 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 blah. Sort of like a synopsis in Expo says, like the unique features in SMAC. I think that'd be fun.
Mm-hmm.
I think that'd be a good idea.
That's actually in Civ Rev. There's a screenshot in the Xbox 360 review that we were talking about earlier. And they find a river and they get to name the river. I'm not sure if it's exactly the same, but...
Sorry, I think he was talking about in just regular Civ 4 or Civ 5, whatever.
Yeah, no, but it'll be in Civ 5 if it's in Civ Rev, maybe. Especially when they talk about using the Explorer to find these things, because that kind of even makes sense and the Explorers are completely useless anyway.
I like that idea of using the Explorer unit. The Super 49ers suggests another great person, a great explorer. No.
Yeah, I don't like that idea either.
No, we don't need another category of great people. It's starting to get a little confusing.
Yeah, but someone rightly points out that a lot of the great explorers are actually great merchants for some reason. So, There aren't really that many great merchants in real history. They're all great explorers.
Yeah. Usually the reason they explored was for, you know, merchant purposes.
Money.
No way.
But why do you need a great explorer for anyway? Just have the things on the map.
Well, they were talking about, like, you got, say, a mountain, and then you send the explorer to the mountain, and they might find some unique feature on the mountain. So they sort of work the tile to try and discover something. Because you remember, a tile is representative of a very large amount of space. So you can't just immediately see some ridiculously big feature there, really.
Yeah, someone suggested they act like goody huts, for example.
I don't agree with that sort of idea that should be revealed later. I think they should just be there, like in Smack. I mean, it's kind of hard to be like, well, this tile that your warriors have gone through, they never really noticed the Grand Canyon. But the explorer ended up finding it. Why are all our people dying and falling off the side of this cliff?
The Bermuda Triangle. Why are our ships disappearing?
But some of the great events actually do this, though. So you get like a great event where they discover that this mountain is important, or this river is important, or there's some exotic parrots here and stuff like that. So it's sort of there.
Did anyone have a look at the thread starter Brock's suggestions for what these natural wonders could be, which I agreed with some subsequent posts, which is that they were way too powerful.
Like the Niagara River and stuff like that.
Well, plus 10 food. I mean, come on. And then go obsolete with corporations. Don't cut me off from 5 people.
Some of these are ridiculous. In Smack, you had maybe each of the tiles of whatever it was have an extra food or something like that, you know?
That would be the monsoon jungle. I love my monsoon jungle. That's great. Fair cities.
Yeah, whatever. No. I'm saying, like, some of these are mega effects, like plus 25 population, plus 10 food, plus 5 this and that and other things. And it's like, that's a bit strong. That's like, you win if you get that.
Yeah.
It's decidedly unbalanced.
Plus 10 food that goes obsolete with corporations is like, okay, I can see it maybe if it goes obsolete if you get one of the food corporations. But to go obsolete as soon as you discover a corporation, that's like, okay, I'd rather not have that because then all of a sudden I lose 5 people and I cry. That's crazy talk.
I think it should be more like the Smacks thing anyway.
Yeah.
Make it a small boost, but not like something uber boost.
And make the map look cool. I mean, it was fun.
There you go. Especially with something like Grand Canyon or something.
Whereas this Ivetur has, this, for example, Grand Canyon, the effect. Tau gains plus 1 gold, plus 1 culture, plus 1 happiness if in a city's cross. That's a little more reasonable.
Yeah, but I still think that's a little bit too much. Pick one of them.
Yeah.
Pick either gold, culture, or happiness and go with a plus 1. Don't make it a be-all, end-all. Make it a kind of a minor boost.
Yeah, make it a nice little bonus, but not something that you're going to do like someone else is saying in this thread and sit there and regenerate to get a particular feature.
Yeah.
I guess my feeling is that the effect of that is already there in random events, except for that it's random, and I'm fine with that. Explorers are useless, and I'm fine with that because that means I don't have to bother building them. And I'm not interested in making a use for that.
But I'd like to see some cool things on the map. Maybe Mount Everest is this massive mountain.
Yeah, that'd be cool, but...
That'd be fun.
You can't have it be a massive mountain if you're going to go about it the way that we were talking about and have to have an explorer go out there and find it. It has to be this particular unit.
Yeah. It's a good idea, but it needs to be worked out a little bit more, basically.
Yeah, it's interesting, but...
As Pedro said, the big question is whether the benefits should be Fat Cross or Civ-wide. And I think it should just be for this specific city.
I concur.
Be seated in the theater where co-hosts share their gameplay experiences. Merck had said that was also done in the Christmas special. Actually, see us talk more about our own games. If someone had a specific game they've played recently that they would like to take a few moments to talk about, by all means, please do so, and then we can make fun of you. I mean, share in your successes.
Yeah, well, I played this interesting game where I realized I'd been playing Civ wrong after you get the oil resource, and I'd built, you know, the oil field thing, pumps the oil out. And for some reason, I finally realized that I was meant to get my workers to build oil pipes back to my cities and then build more oil pipes between the cities. And it was about that point in the game that I realized I was actually dreaming and I'd suddenly invented this nonsense and I woke up.
That's awesome.
For some reason, all these pipes everywhere made all the travel across my land faster. Like, everyone was using 5 squares per turn, and well, it was really interesting.
Oh, that's awesome.
Oh, he was building subways.
All right, everyone build pipelines on mountainous terrain. We'll slide down them. Whee!
I remember this one time where I had my mouse pointer over the Civilization 4 button, and I almost pressed it, but I didn't.
This one time.
This one time in band camp? No.
I had this one game recently. I only had about 5 cities. It was a standard size map, and it was pretty well all landmass with a few lakes. It was random civs, so it was Peter of the Germans, and he was going around, and he was just steamrolling over people, and of course they're coming to me saying, "Won't you join us in our war?" And I'm like, "No, you know, I only care about myself." And I was starting to stockpile some units where I was actually defending my borders, even though I had open borders with pretty well everybody, putting units on my borders so that as soon as someone declared war against me, it would take a while for them to advance into my territory, because now I'm into the modern era and they could move a little faster. He did attack me, and of course, I had animations on, and that turn took about 6 minutes. Just sitting there, I eventually just started wiping out his cities, and eventually, when I was done, half of the map was empty, because I just absolutely razed everything. In the end, Peter, even though I had like minus 34 or something, that was on noble level, that was not on pre-settler.
Go you!
He would not contact me just to save his own skin. He just said, "Okay, I'll talk to you," when he had like a few cities left. And I said, "Okay, peace with you, but you give me one of your 3 remaining cities." And he's like, "Ha, never." I'm like, "Okay.
Fine, I'll take it."
Mm-hmm.
We are a stubborn son of a...
Call in today.
North America, the number is 301-637-7659. That's 301-637-POLY.
In Europe, 4420-7871-7659. That's 4420-7871-POLY.
You can Skype us at The Polycast or email us at polycast@bulletin.net.
For more information on Polycast, our sibling show Modcast, or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at polycast.abolitan.net.
I enjoy doing podcasts, because I do my own podcast with some friends. It really doesn't fit with the Civ crowd, but we do talk about Civ occasionally. It's called Industry Misinterpretations, and it's about the technology industry from programmers' perspectives.
Oh, that sounds cool.
They have class in Australia.
Just Australian intelligence, AI.
Comes from a land down under.
No singing.
Imran? Yes, thank you. That applies to you.
No
too.
Singing.
Oh, we have an opening, Imran. They didn't ban rapping. Yo, 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 what's up?
Hey. All forms of singing, beat poetry, rapping.
What about Gregorian chants?
Only if you do them.
Me?
Yes, you.
Awesome. I've got exemption.
So you have an accent. We'll try to listen to one of yours, and then we'll decide.
Yeah, no.
You've been listening to episode 38 of Polycast, a official podcast of Polton Civilization site. Joining me today were Daniel Q.
There's more than one of me?
Also, Makalua.
It's actually an official, but yeah, I'm just being picky about grammar now, sorry.
Also, K-Mad.
Bye.
And we were also joined by our guest, Michael Lucas-Smith.
Hey.
And me, Imran Siddiqui. If you're really in the mood to hear more accents, listen up next week when Modcast will be back to give you your modding information and more in-depth workings into the innards of Civ 4.
Wow, that was elaborate.
Imran comes from the land of innards.
Indeed.
Let's give this a go. No, that doesn't work.
By funny, I meant you. No.
Ooh, it's a family show.
You'll have to edit out the slapping.
You say edit out the slapping? What?
In the Senate, we had tech-whoring and slapping today. That's too fun.
Tickle and slap. Record date?
February 16th, 2008.
Sound Clips, copyright Civilization 4 and the Warlords and Meon the Sword expansion packs. Copyright 2008, Appolton Civilization site at appolton.net.